to City Unleashed, where we decode pet health with some of the best vets in Columbia, South Carolina. I'm your host, Emily White. And today we have veterinary cardiologist, Dr. Rebecca Kennerly with us today. Hi, Dr. Kennerly. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Tell us about yourself.
So I'm a veterinary cardiologist, which means I only practice medicine that has to do with the heart. And I've been a cardiologist for almost 4 years now. Before that, I did my cardiology training at the University of Georgia. So I was practicing cardiology then, just under a cardiologist. And that was 4 years at UGA in Athens, Georgia. Before that, I was in vet school at Auburn University.
Awesome. Very cool. And are you from South Carolina?
Kind of. Long story. So yes, I was born in Columbia, South Carolina. My family relocated when I was pretty young to Alabama. So predominantly grew up in Alabama, which is why I went to Auburn University for vet school.
Okay.
Yep. We've since kind of all migrated back here. But I mean, I certainly grew up with Columbia predominantly being a second home, visiting grandparents, going to the Riverbanks Zoo, you know, all of those things.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very cool. Okay. Well, we're going to get right into it. So from a cardiology standpoint, will you tell us what your like top three pieces of advice are when it comes to pets? So we're talking dogs and cats and their hearts.
Totally. Yeah. From a cardiology standpoint specifically, top three pieces of advice. The first, especially living in South Carolina with a lot of mosquitoes, you should be on a heartworm preventive for your pet. And so heartworms are spread by mosquitoes. It's a completely preventable disease. And it's a devastating disease when it happens. Really easy to stay on a heartworm preventive. So that is by far my biggest piece of advice. Second piece of advice, and maybe this is not so much cardiology, but just general pet health. I pay a lot of attention to nutrition. I pay a lot of attention to, you know, body condition. I'm really looking for my patients to be on the lean side, not being too chubby. Food is not necessarily love. Love is love. And so, you know, avoiding a whole bunch of extra people snacks, it just kind of runs into trouble there. And always like talking with your vet and your primary care vet about what specific food you're feeding and whether that's a good decision for your pet, I think is super important. Yeah.
So something that I've noticed about the cardio department is food. You guys are very passionate about dog food.
Yeah, very much, for sure. So, and this was something that, you know, before I was in my training program, I didn't really hear much about. It's kind of a new problem in veterinary cardiology, in dogs specifically, that's called diet-associated cardiomyopathy. And it really means that a specific diet that a dog is eating, for whatever reason, that diet leads to a pretty devastating type of heart disease that's called DCM or dilated cardiomyopathy. And, you know, the good news is with that particular disease, if we do think it's related to diet, if we can get the pet on a different food, then we may see reversal of their heart changes. And so, you know, I make this diagnosis not infrequently. I mean, still to this day, I make this diagnosis, you know, maybe every month or so. In every situation, it's a pet parent that I think, you know, cares for their dog very, very much, is trying to make the best decision for their pet, but, you know, they just weren't aware of some of the risk factors and particular diets that might be important for an individual dog. You know, we do know a lot more information now than we used to know, say, 5 years ago, you know, when I kind of started this training. And so we used to think that a diet-associated cardiomyopathy was more a deficiency, like there's something missing from the diet that the heart needs, and that's why we're seeing these changes to the heart. But we now think that certain ingredients may cause a toxicity to heart muscle cells. And so, you know, things for me that I really, really try to avoid are ingredients that are really heavily legume-based. And so we're talking about peas, chickpeas, lentils, you know, those sorts of ingredients can be problematic for some dogs, and it can be pretty devastating in some situations. But, you know, the good news, the flip side to that is, you know, there's not a lot of instances, I would say, in veterinary cardiology where we can reverse the situation, right? Where, you know, I can fully fix this heart disease or I can make this patient's life, you know, dramatically different. More a lot of the times my job as a cardiologist is to help the heart manage, you know, the right. problem that it has, not so much fully fix that underlying problem. But, you know, I do enjoy a diet-associated disease because it gives me a little bit more of kind of a glimmer of hope where I can make the situation better. And I've certainly had patients that were previously in congestive heart failure, had a lot of symptoms, and were able to fully, you know, reverse those changes, come off a lot of their cardiac medications, and really, you know, have a good long-term survival. So that's the positive. But
that's
we do
a really good feeling.
It is, yeah, yeah. But we do. We talk about diets all the time. We really, really do. I don't shy away from kind of having that conversation with owners.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before coming to CVETS, have no veterinary background. I have a dog. Yeah. That's my veterinary background. When we were first getting our dog, one of the big questions was, what should we yeah. feed him? And there's so many things out there, yeah. right? And at the end of the day, we just ended up asking our vet, we were yeah. like, what do you think we should feed him?
Totally. Which is absolutely the right decision. Like, ask your vet, talk to your vet. So, I mean, there's a ton of information out there. There are a ton of, people who are willing to answer that question, and you don't necessarily know whether you trust the information coming from one, you know, one place versus another, but you're going to trust the information coming from your vet. And so that's, that's my biggest piece of advice. Talk to your vet about your pet food. Don't just pick a pet food.
Absolutely. I do social media for CVETS. Yeah. I jokingly say I make the TikToks. People will still say, hey, my dog's acting this way. What do you think I should do? And I'm like, no idea. Yeah. But I am confident sharing that, like, many problems with your animals can be avoided if you just keep them at a healthy weight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. For sure. I mean, especially particular types of animals. I think it's even more important. The most popular breed in the country is a French bulldog, and a fat French bulldog breeds way worse than a skinny French bulldog. They have a lot more health problems, a lot more orthopedic problems. And so, you know, again, from a cardio standpoint, I care a lot about how patients breathe and things like that. And so being on the thinner side helps me.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
What are some, like, early warning signs of heart disease? Like, what can people look out for?
Yeah, so early warning signs of heart disease. This is kind of a tough one to answer because I think in general, both dogs and cats, when it comes to heart disease, most are fully asymptomatic until you are at later stages of the disease.
Of course.
And that's pretty frustrating, right? So you don't have any symptoms until you have congestive heart failure or until you have exercise intolerance, you know, or your heart has dealt with so much for so long that you're starting to see those symptoms later in the disease. And so I think for dogs in particular, the earliest signs of heart disease aren't necessarily going to be things that you pick up as an owner. They're going to be things that your vet picks up. So hearing a heart murmur on a physical exam, even before the onset of any symptoms, that's a reason to investigate, you know, get a little bit more information. That tells you that there's something abnormal about the heart that's causing that sound that your veterinarian's hearing. And so, you know, that's probably the biggest one for dogs, is, you know, keep up with those annual exams, keep up with those, visits to your primary vet, because they're going to pick up on things at an earlier stage in the disease process where, you know, we can make a plan for delaying that disease progression. We can kind of get more information on what's going on. I think those symptoms of heart disease, at the later stages, let's say we've kind of, you know, not had the luxury of diagnosing it sooner, and we are just starting to see symptoms at later stages, they tend to really be in two categories. We're either in, you know, the breathing trouble side of things. So that means, you know, heavy breathing, faster breathing, coughing for no reason, those sorts of things. Or they're in the, you know, I don't tolerate exercise or I don't tolerate exertion. I get really excited and I feel, you know, weak or winded or lightheaded, you know, that side of things. So any symptoms in those categories, you know, certainly reasons to look. Cats are really hard just because, you know, we often don't really get to know that cats mm-hmm. have heart disease and unless you go looking. Even some screening diagnostic steps like listening to the heart may not be super reliable for a cat. You can have a perfectly normal heart rhythm, heart sounds, and still have heart disease in your cat. Even some of the screening testing that your vet may do, like x-rays, not as sensitive. And so cats are a little bit more difficult to diagnose, but, you know.
That sounds about right.
You have to kind of go looking.
You know, cats, they just, they're cats.
Yeah.
Don't really, they would be hard to diagnose.
Yeah, they don't read the textbook. They don't make it easy for any of us, owners and vets included, for sure.
My next question is, are there breeds that are more prone to heart disease or heart issues?
Yeah, definitely. And so, as a working at CVETS, how many people work at CVETS? 200 plus, probably. Mm-hmm. And people, you know, they obviously know me as the veterinary cardiologist, but, you know, I'll see colleagues walking around with their Doberman or their Great Dane, and I'm like, hey, have we met? Should we chat? Could, you know, maybe I should do some screening at some point. 'Cause certainly there are breeds that, you know, we know have a high incidence of having heart disease at some point in their life. And from a dog category, that tends to be, I mean, Dobermans, Boxers, Great Danes, and Cavalier King Charles Spaniels, my personal favorite. You know, I can, you know, I'm always willing to kind of have those conversations. I'll even see, you know, patients of those breeds just for screening exams. You know, totally healthy dog, owner that wants to be really proactive, not having any symptoms. And they say, hey, I know Dobermans get heart disease, so I'd like to set up a relationship and kind of get some screening exams every year or two, depending on what you think is reasonable. And I'm very happy to do that. So I see those patients all the time. And that's really what I recommend to friends, family, colleagues. You know, if I know they have a breed that I think is high risk of having disease, we should just start looking.
Because
again,
care.
Yeah, you're not, you know, you don't know that they're not going to show you any symptoms until you're at those later stages of the disease process. And it's so, you know, so much more benefit to getting that information sooner. So screening is super important. Cavies are kind of easy from a screening standpoint because the type of heart disease that Cavaliers get is called myxomatous mitral valve disease, which the onset of that disease is the onset of a heart murmur on an exam. So you don't have to do as much screening testing. That screening test is just, you know, a veterinarian listening to the heart with a stethoscope. But I think there are a couple published papers. You know, one says, and I'd quiz vet students about this when I was teaching at the University of Georgia, you know, what percentage of Cavaliers have heart disease by the time they're 10 years of age? Do you have a guess what percentage that would be?
I feel like I might know the answer.
It's 100%. Yeah, by 10 years of age. Yeah. And so that just means, you know, if you have a middle-aged to older Cavalier, you know, and your vet, you know, mentions a heart murmur, you should kind of take that seriously.
Absolutely.
You know, kind of get some more information from that, because the odds are that's a real finding and that's real disease that's there.
I feel like it's important for the general public to just know that,
for
hey,
sure.
Cavies
yeah,
get
absolutely.
Heart disease 100%
yeah.
of the time.
100% of the time. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I even think, you know, puppy exams for some of these high-risk breeds like Boxers, Dobermans, Cavies, you know, we should be talking about heart disease. Like, this is going to happen at some point in this dog's life. We really need to, you know, set up a plan for how we're going to monitor for that and how we're going to approach it when the day comes. But yeah, I mean, super important information to have.
So when someone sees a cardiologist, a veterinary yeah. cardiologist, what is the difference between what you can do to help these animals versus
totally.
What just like a primary vet can do?
Yeah, totally. So I have access to and kind of training to do a lot more specialty testing. I also, you know, because I only practice cardiology, I mean, this is what I'm doing 10 dozen times a day. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that expertise and kind of something I've probably seen before, something, you know, information that I may have access to a little bit easier than finding that information with a primary. I, as a veterinary cardiologist, I predominantly do echocardiograms, which is an ultrasound of the heart. So it really lets us know very specifically what is abnormal about the heart, if anything, kind of grading, you know, or staging the severity of that abnormality and setting up a really good treatment plan. You know, and for certain types of heart disease, you're not going to see, again, you're not going to see changes on the more preliminary diagnostic testing like x-rays or looking for symptoms, looking for changes on a physical exam until you're at those later stages. So the echo is really kind of the most sensitive test that you can do to look for heart disease and characterize that heart disease. I also do, you know, a lot in terms of arrhythmia management, and so I have access to a number of different ways to evaluate for arrhythmia, so both doing, you know, a six-lead ECG in the clinic. I can do a Holter monitoring system, which means evaluating the dog's heart rhythm on an at-home basis, a vest that they get to wear that's super cute going home, and recording all their heartbeats there. And we have in-hospital telemetry monitoring, which just means any patient that's hospitalized, we can watch every single heartbeat that they're having to look for abnormalities in their heart rhythm. I also have some more training when it comes to, procedural interventions, dogs that may have congenital heart disease that we can correct with a procedure. An example would be a patent ductus arteriosus or a PDA. It's my favorite thing to diagnose because it's the one thing in veterinary cardiology that's 100% fixable, and I actually get to graduate these patients and never have them come back to see cardiology, which is super cool. And I don't currently, but I do work with other cardiologists, you know, regionally that do pacemaker implantation, where I can evaluate the dog's pacemaker function on kind of a long-term management basis. So those are some other things I can can do, which is cool.
So I don't know that I realized that dogs could have pacemakers.
Oh yeah, dogs can get pacemakers. When I was at the University of Georgia, we had a horse had a pacemaker, we had a ferret had a pacemaker,
wow.
Cats with pacemakers. Yeah, not that uncommon, I would say. The most common reason for a dog to need a pacemaker is what we think is an age-related degeneration of one of the electrical pathways in the heart that's called the AV node, and they end up with a heart block, which just means their normal pacemaker is working, but all of that electricity is being blocked in that center pathway of the heart. And so their heart rate's usually really low. A dog's heart rate should, for the most part, you know, depending on how nervous they are, how excited they are, it should be somewhere between like 80 and 120 beats per minute, somewhere in that range. And these are dogs that show up at the vet because they've been lethargic, maybe they've collapsed or had weakness episodes, and their heart rate's 30, you know, or it's 25, 30. And so those are dogs that, again, we can fix with a pacemaker. I'm currently sending them to other institutions to kind of get their pacemaker implanted. And then we can follow up on those patients long term to manage their pacemaker. But I really enjoyed pacemaker like technology and programming when I was training. It's something that I think I got a lot more training as a veterinary cardiologist than even, maybe I shouldn't say this, but then like the human side, just because human medicine is, you know, it's so segmented. You have someone else who does the echo, someone who does the pacemaker evaluation, and then the cardiologist who kind of oversees those findings versus it's just kind of me, you know, running the show. And so I'm doing my own echo, I'm doing my own pacemaker evaluation. So really having to like understand that equipment and how that works. But pacemaker programming is really cool. Pacemakers are pretty smart. They know, you know, how much the dog is moving around, whether the dog's heart rate can be kind of lower when they're resting or whether their heart rate can be a little bit faster when they're exercising. They can kind of detect that motion.
That's awesome.
Again, you know, it's a dog that heart rate is 30 in a critical scenario at risk of passing away to, okay, now we're good. Pacemaker's working. So, yeah.
It's like a smart heart.
It is. Yeah. It's like a smart heart. We do, you know, because the pacemaker, you know, programming for the most part is depending on how much the dog is moving, you know, we'll run into trouble if this is a dog that's not moving because they're in the hospital, maybe they're sedated, maybe they're under anesthesia and they have a pacemaker and the anesthesiologist or, you know, veterinarian in the area calls me and says, hey, this heart rate, you know, the pacemaker is pacing this heart at a pretty low rate. I'd really like the heart rate to be faster. You know, how do we fix that? What do we do about that? And I'm like, well, you can kind of pretend like the dog is walking, maybe just like tap over the pacemaker, it's going to it's gonna feel that motion. It's going to think the dog is walking, and it'll pick up the heart rate. And so little tips like that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you kind of advise a lot of people, too. I know I've been,
I do, yeah.
I've been in your room before, and a lot of the ER doctors will call and say, hey, like, can you pop down here and just look at this? What is that like, working at CVETS with all these different specialties, being able to work together like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think really good. So I think, am I the only, maybe I'm not the only, dentistry by themselves, dermatology by themselves, but cardiologists kind of few and far between. You know, there's not a ton of us even in the state of South Carolina. And so, you know, I not only am kind of constantly talking with colleagues at CVETS about, you know, weighing in, could heart be part of this story, or, you know, could a heart medication help make this dog feel better, you know, things like that. But I've talked with primary vets kind of constantly, just, you know, weighing in, giving advice on, you know, what they're seeing, even if it's, hey, can I send you this ECG so you can look at this ECG for me? Yeah, totally. Can you look at these X-rays? We're all kind of still learning, you know. It's a practice, not a perfection. But
that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. So you're always have your hands in something different.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I'll always give you my opinion.
Love that. Do you see, I know in neurology they see like 90% dogs. Do you have like a 50-50 kind of situation? Or?
No. I mean, I would say majority dogs, but I wouldn't say 90% dogs. Maybe 75 if I had to guess. We could pull the numbers and know for sure. But I do see a fair amount of cat patients. We joke on cardiology that, like, me and both the of my nurses that work with me, like, we're all pretty big cat people. I have four cats. It's like an obsessive number of cats. But, you know, we'll have a cat patient or a cat appointment that comes in, and like probably the first 5, maybe 10 minutes of the appointment, and we're just like, oh, look at its toe beans and look at its whiskers. And I'm like, okay, focus. You have to listen to its heart. Like, we have to get this done. We're like, all right, we've used up some of our kitty minutes. But yeah, I love seeing cat patients. Cats are complicated. I mean, they're hard for vets. They're hard for cardiologists. Cat disease is kind of difficult. Cat heart disease is difficult for cardiologists as well. But yeah, I'll just lose my mind over cats.
You guys see some pretty cool cats, too. I've seen
Sphinx
cats in there, exactly. Some Maine Coons.
Yeah, so kind of similar story to what I talked about with the dogs, that, you know, there are certain breeds of cats that have a higher incidence of heart disease. And so, you know, again, if I, you know, if an owner with a purebred cat, particularly, I'd say Sphinx and Maine Coon are probably the most common, you know, wants a screening evaluation for heart disease, I'm never going to say no to that proposition. I think that's a good decision. Again, it's really hard to diagnose heart disease in a cat, so might as well go looking. But yeah, you know, we see big old giant Maine Coons that are like panthers holding them, and then, you know, Sphinx fully hairless and easier to echo because you don't have the hair getting in the way with the ultrasound machine. So
didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I once was called into your room because you had a ferret.
That's true. Yeah. I've done a few, more so when I was at the University of Georgia. So UGA has a zoo medicine kind of residency training program. So they train veterinarians who end up being specialists in exotics and zoo medicine. So for that reason, I saw a fair number of exotics kind of coordinated with those doctors and doing echoes or cardio evaluations. Since I've been in Columbia, I've seen a few. I've seen one guinea pig so far, two ferrets, I believe, so far. Always way bigger challenge for me because, like, a guinea pig heart, I mean, it's like a centimeter, it's tiny, it's a tiny, tiny little heart. But my, you know, one of my nurses likes the pocket pets, and, you know, I'll be pretty transparent with the primary vets that are referring me these cases that, like, hey, I'm going to do my best. We'll see what we can see. You know, we'll kind of get as much information as we can. But yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. Have you seen the pictures of, like guinea pigs or what are those little ones, hedgehogs, getting x-rays and they just like tape them down?
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
This was when I was an intern at Georgia. So before I was just doing cardiology specifically training, I was an intern. So I was working a lot of ER and kind of different services. And I had a sugar glider as a patient that I had to get x-rays on. And I'm like, okay, how am I going to accomplish this? And it was the x-ray technician that actually came up with the idea. We used x-ray like film and just made this little tube and put the sugar glider in the tube and kind of rotated it on the table to take the picture.
Like when you put a baby, have you seen how babies get x-rays? They put them in like a cylinder.
Yeah.
With like their arms up and they're like just
that.
Like...
It was exactly like that. Yeah.
Huh. And
that,
innovation.
Yeah.
You do what you got to do.
It's like, well, it's like... 100 grams. How am I going to do x-rays on this? So, but yeah.
I imagine with a guinea pig too, if their hearts are so tiny, like
tiny,
your machine tools. Yeah. Are, what do we call this?
Yeah. So like an echo and an echo probe. Mm-hmm. So the transducer, I mean, I'm using equipment, you know, that we use at human hospitals. And so when I was setting up my echo machine with the Philips rep that kind of came to set it up, she kept laughing because I was calling the 12 millimeter or the 12 transducer the cat probe. She just thought that was hilarious because they call it the baby probe or like the infant probe.
Right, it's right.
Like, I'm like, no, that's the cat probe. It's like, that's cat. What that is. But yeah, so I'm, you know, I'm using equipment that's made for like humans of various ages, and I have a tiny little bitty animal, and even kittens, puppies are a little challenging.
Right. Your probe is probably bigger than
it's
the
bigger.
Animal.
Yeah, it's bigger than them for sure. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. So what is one of the more memorable experiences you've had? When I think of you and how I've known you for the past year and things, I think of one of your PDAs that you did, Julie.
Yeah.
What comes to mind for you when you think of your most memorable?
Yeah. I mean, I love a PDA. So I've done three so far since I've been at CVETS. And it's just it's a great procedure. So you know, a PDA, this is a dog that has a congenital shunt in the heart, something that they were born with. And that shunt, if it's not addressed, usually causes them to be in heart failure by the time they're a year or two of age and has a, you know, relatively high fatality rate, even as a young dog. But if we can close the shunt, if we can correct that, then that dog can go on and live a normal life. And so that's one of my, you know, favorite procedures to do. It's also great because it's minimally invasive. And so we're just talking about a catheter and the blood vessel in the leg. This isn't, you know, any major, you know, recovery from surgery and a lot of, you know, tissue healing and things. Really, they're just kind of bouncing around the second day. And we're like, no, calm down. You actually just did a lot. So yeah, that's probably a big one. I mean, I think most of my like favorite memories, I get really, really close relationships with my clients. Like I see them all the time. You know, part of why I can be successful managing heart disease and especially congestive heart failure is if the owner, you know, has a really good understanding of what's going on. They're kind of picking up on any little change and how their pet is doing, keeping me updated so I can make these, you know, little tinkers to treatment plan, kind of keep them going in the right direction. And so, yeah, you know, I get to know them I see them all the time. I talk to them all the time. I get to know them very well. So that's probably the favorite. We have a big board in cardiology that's like a cork board that we've just been like adding like cards and pictures and like fun things that people have sent us and shared. And it's a fun little kind of memory board.
So, that's awesome. Yeah. They become family.
I mean, yeah, absolutely. For sure.
You're helping them get better.
For sure.
Okay, last question. Do you have a favorite heart?
Yeah, totally. It's a Cavalier. It really is. Because I echo dogs and cats constantly, I'll get kind of bummed if it's a fat barrel chested something. I'm like, oh, this is going to be so hard to echo. And like my shoulder's going to hurt and my elbow's going to hurt. And, like, this is just going to be a challenge. But like a skinny spaniel, they just image so beautifully. They're like the prettiest pictures I've ever taken. I'm like, ooh, I can send these to my mentors. Like, this is great.
Satisfying.
So yeah. And I just love mitral valve disease. I mean, it's 90% of what I do is mitral valve disease in dogs. And so, yeah, that's my favorite.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Until next time, give your pets an extra pet from us. And thanks for joining us on Soda City Unleashed.